Hello and welcome back to Tip TV Finance. We have my co-host, who is Alessio Rostani from LeadingTrader.com, and somebody who's been described as a very clever man, Jeremy Stretch, head of G10 FX for CIBC. Who was that?
I don't know.
Just the head of voice in the studio a few minutes ago. Right, for a change, I actually have some proper questions here.
So you're actually prepared?
Yes, it's like Mastermind. You can say yes or you know, or you can pass or whatever, you know, that type of thing. RBNZ rate cut. Any particular view on that? Was it?
Well, I think markets were fully anticipating it, and in a sense, that was the classic reaction where, you know, we had a fully anticipated move, and indeed, markets have been hoping, unrealistically, I think, in most instances, but hoping that perhaps the RBNZ would be a little more aggressive than just doing a quarter. So whilst the RBNZ spent a long time in the statement saying, well, they're worried about the impact of the currency, by only doing 25, not fulfilling some of the market's expectations of doing 50, they ended up actually strengthening the currency, which is exactly what they didn't want. So the RBNZ will no doubt be scratching their heads a little bit and saying, well, what's the market done here? Why were we... why did we cut rates and yet we still ended up with a stronger currency? And ultimately, I think it leads the RBNZ to still be in play. It's the question of when the next cut comes and how many cuts beyond that. And I think that's going to be the ensuing story for New Zealand, and you have to balance that against what is still a very hot property market.
Right, and the whole strategy of lowering rates to zero, is it... I mean, that's the thing. I mean, the RBNZ have just proved how... almost like futile now, or almost, I mean, the markets have got used to all this and it doesn't really have any effect at all. Where are we heading in the whole scheme of things? So we have the Bank of England doing their move. Presumably some in the market, some institutions actually think that they're going to go to negative rates despite all the assertions. There's no end game to this rate cutting policy, is there?
Well, I think there is an endgame, actually, because I think in the context of a number of central banks, perhaps they've recognised rather belatedly that their experiment of negative rates hasn't actually been the great panacea to the ills of the market. So I think, you know, the unintended consequences of this policy or these policies have been rather more pronounced than perhaps the central banks would have liked. And I think it's been the classic case that policymakers have felt the need to do something because of the pressure externally, whether it be from politicians, whether it be from financial markets, when in fact doing nothing, or at least leaving monetary policy expansionary but not necessarily going into increasingly unconventional areas would have been perhaps the better policy option. I think for somewhere like New Zealand, of course, they have an inflation or a lack of a disinflation problem. It's not necessarily a growth conundrum, which is perhaps being seen in some of the other developed markets per se. So there is still some room for the RBNZ to cut, but they need to be mindful of, as I say, the housing market. I think for the UK, I wouldn't necessarily expect rates to be going negative, and I think we may well find there's going to be an increasing debate about fiscal and monetary policy acting in tandem. And I think that's going to be the interesting policy discourse over the course of the ensuing months.
Speaking about, you were speaking earlier about how the markets were expecting the rate cuts and everything else. I want to talk about the UK market and your view on this. We've seen the pound drop heavily after Brexit. We saw a further, I wouldn't say a further drop, but certainly a sell-off after the rate cut last week. Do you think, in your view, that the market has already priced in these rate cuts, further rate cuts maybe in the Bank of England? Do you think we've reached a potential maybe extreme point where we could see a bounce, a potential rally in the pound? My personal view, and we were talking about this with Zach, and Zach, he would like the pound to drop to 70 cents, I think.
I think it'll go to, the Head and Shoulders formation on there, which wasn't my homework, somebody else's, it's implying 70 cents, like below parity on the dollar and down to that low on a 30-year chart, and, you know, total nightmare there. Euro sterling to go, well, you know, 1-1 against... the euro. Is there a case for or a risk of pound ultra pound weakness?
I don't think there is to that extent. I think it's interesting that when you look at the way the market has been positioning itself, we have seen sterling short positions building to exponential levels, and we're back to levels that I haven't seen certainly in the last 15 or 16 years in terms of sterling short. So the market already has this trade on in relative size. So the question is, what's going to be the catalyst to encourage sterling to fall further? Now, I think you're right to say that the markets are interpreting and anticipating that the bank will probably add a little more stimulus to the policy mix. So there is still a little bit of room on conventional policy in terms of cutting rates. It won't make any difference, of course. But from a presentational standpoint, yes, they may well do more in terms of their balance sheet expansion. So there is the prospect of some degree of monetary policy extension, which could encourage a little bit of further sterling weakness. I think the other or the next shoe to drop will be when we move from survey data, which has been exceptionally weak, to real economy data. And I think that's going to be the catalyst that may well see sterling down to 125, maybe even 122 against the dollar. I don't see a capitulation beyond that.
But the bear argument for sterling is probably the only thing of any sense that I've heard from Mark Carney is that he said that the economy here is reliant on the kindness of strangers. And those strangers looked at Brexit and thought, we don't like the UK anymore. We've liked it for the last 30 years since Thatcher. We don't like it anymore, and it's out of the EU, and we're going to put our hot money somewhere else.
Well,
you've got a capital flight from, you know, across the board, and that would be enough to change, you know, literally back to below 1985 levels on, you know, the whole just unwinding that 35-year influx of money or inflow of money.
Well, if you were to see an extreme level of capital flight, then I think you could well see an extension of the move. And indeed, we wrote before the Brexit referendum that if we did see a vote to leave, we would be falling back to the 1985 levels. Now, we thought that the low 120s would be the trough in that cycle. So we're pretty close to that. So I think that's worked out relatively well. I think in terms of the hot money flows, I think it's interesting because, of course, the alternative is saying, well, investors will immediately flee London or flee the UK because of the potential of an exit. And, of course, we haven't actually seen exit yet. We're moving towards it very inexorably or very slowly. But I think the alternative to the argument would be that, of course, we continue to see investors looking at the UK and saying, well, actually, it's now exponentially cheaper because of the fall in sterling. So there is some money flow which can still headed towards the UK irrespective of the hot money flow argument.
I know we're running out of time, but do you think Theresa May will be successful in this balancing act of keeping the UK having access to the single market and at the same time exiting the euro? Do you think that's going to work?
Well, politically, that's a circle that seems almost impossible to square. So I think something will have to give. I suspect there will be an acquiescence on some acceptance in terms of the migration argument, which will upset a lot of people. But I think the recognition is the fact that, or the important recognition will be the reliance on the maintenance of the single market access, particularly for the financial sector. And of course, I would say that because I represent it. But I think the importance of the financial sector, both in terms of revenue directly to the Treasury, but also in terms of VAT, etc., I think it's sufficiently strong to suggest that there will be some deal which we work through, which will have to see some compromise on the immigration side.
Right, so not Brexit, but just fudge it, basically.
Well, it will be a Brexit, but it will be a Brexit light, I guess, is one way to look at it. But I think there are so many twists and turns which will be ongoing, and trying to forecast politics is infinitely more difficult than trying to forecast macroeconomics or currencies, in a sense, because there are so many other variables in play. And of course, 2017 is a year of extreme political upheaval, potentially, with elections in both France and Germany. Also, interestingly, in the Netherlands, that might be an interesting variable just to keep into the mix from a European standpoint in spring next year.
Yes. Jeremy Stretch, head of G10 FX for CIBC, thank you for coming in today.
Thanks very much.
We'll be back after the break.